ways. This Thursday, November 7th, donating $10 or more will give you a chance to win $600 worth of new snow gear from Patagonia, a two-night stay at Five Pine Lodge, and four single-day lift tickets to Mount Bachelor. Donate through our website at kboo.fm/give and end the year knowing that you did good for your community. That's kboo.fm/give this Thursday, November 7th.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. And now it's time for Press Watch.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda program. Hi, I'm Therese Mitchell, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And this is live radio. And right now, as I speak to you, I am fumbling with my computer so I can get everything set up here. Although I'm a bit more organized than that, I've printed out my pages, and so I'm ready to roll. And what I want to talk about today, I was just at a Portland Peace and Justice Works Conference on War and Climate. And I want to present some of that information here. And I want to preface it by saying the Pentagon knows what they're doing. Trump, in his degenerate and twisted way, knows what he's doing. And our desire to live in peace, in dignity, and prosperity, and with a healed climate is faced fiercely by the powers of imperialism and whiteness. And we are not going to be able to move until we break that wall. So let's go to breaking news about impeachment. John Bolton didn't show up. Surprise! He kind of teased like he might. But the thing is, John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, was requested to show up. And when I read that, I was just like, what? Requested John Bolton? You don't request things of John Bolton. You get the sergeant at arms to point something deadly in his face and subpoena him, and he has to show. But they don't even do sergeant at arms. I think the Congress does need to reinstate the sergeant at arms, and they need to be just as fierce a machine gun wielding, I don't care, anti-tank gun wielding bunch as they need to be to compel the criminal executive branch to come to terms with the Constitution as it is. You know, the Constitution, it's just, I won't say it's flawed, I'll say worse. It's, you know, it's this disgusting slave owner document that's intended to keep the powerful in power. But it is a set of laws. It is a frame, and you can climb on that frame a bit, and you can get some progress with that frame, or with another frame if you actually go there. But if we're just going to ignore the laws, then what do you got? You got the power of the executive branch and all the very enthusiastic and frankly fascistic military men who would support him. So John Bolton didn't show. Other witnesses have told the impeachment committees that Bolton vocally objected to the mixing of U.S. national security priorities in Ukraine with Donald Trump's political priorities. Bolton ended one meeting with Ukrainians and Ambassador Gordon Sondland, yes, he of Portland, abruptly, saying, "We don't do politics here," according to testimony he's been quoted as calling Rudy Giuliani a hand grenade. And that's because Giuliani was in Ukraine at the same time as the ambassador, doing in runs around the ambassador and trying to promote Trump's agenda, which was to defeat Biden in 2020. So this is what the impeachment thing is all about, that the president has undertaken to enlist foreign countries to help him keep the presidency. In other words, he has circumvented the electoral process altogether. Now, you've heard me complain on the air quite often about how Trump stole the election by closing polls and directly by ditching votes, and all of that's on gregpalace.com. But now we're going even further, and he simply wishes to rule as a militaristic fascist without bothering with more or less fair elections. Televised hearings of the impeachment process are to begin next week, and that is very significant. I will point out why. I'm old enough to remember watching the impeachment hearings versus Nixon, and I was in a military town at the time. It was in San Antonio, Texas, and the numbers favoring impeachment nationwide were pretty similar to what they are right now before the televised hearings. They're about half for, half against. Didn't look like it was going to fly. It really didn't. The impeachment went on for a while, but the televised coverage of committee hearings resumed on July 24th, 1974. The commercial broadcast networks televised the evening sessions, while PBS broadcast the morning and afternoon sessions as well. And that is what I watched. I remember watching Senator Sam Ervin and all of his, you know, Southernisms. But it was quite a show. It was after considerable debate about whether such broadcasts were a good idea. This is from Wikipedia. The first broadcast was an evening session of the committee on the evening of the 24th, which started 2 days of televised opening statements by committee members. In total, there were 6 days of 13 hours per day of televised coverage watched by millions of Americans. On the afternoon of Friday, July 26, television viewers watched live as the first article of impeachment was read into the record against the president. On July 25, 1974, Texas Democrat Barbara Jordan delivered a 15-minute televised speech before the Judiciary Committee in support of impeachment. Her denunciation of President Nixon's abuses of power stirred the nation and earned her national prize for her rhetoric, genuineness, and insight. Representative Walter Flowers of Alabama, conservative Democrat, was considered to be leaning against impeachment, but he eventually said, "I felt that if we didn't impeach, we'd just ingrain and stamp in our highest office a standard of conduct that's just unacceptable." The committee held those televised debates. They ended on the 30th, after which the committee voted to recommend impeachment, and Nixon resigned a little more than a week later, August 9th. And the reason he resigned, in my opinion, was those televised hearings. So this is why I say it's significant that there are going to be whatever chance there is for impeachment, whatever chance there is for moving, actually whatever chance there is for conviction or for convincing most of the nation to turn against Trump, it will be those televised hearings. Because one thing I learned from traveling across the nation is that all of the evasions and lies that Trump has been spewing out have been standard fodder, because across the nation, people are watching Fox News, and Fox News will make any excuse for the president because they like that power. They like being the official network of Trumpism. Now I have some other headlines, and then I want to talk about war and the climate. The Radio Education Network of Bolivia, or AirBol, leaked 16 audios involving opposition leaders who are calling for a coup d'etat against the government of President Evo Morales, a political action which would have been coordinated from the U.S. Embassy in the Andean country. That's from Telesur. It's the Cuban commie network, and the reason they say that is because of history. This is the way it's always been done. Continuing with their script, among those mentioned in the audios are U.S. Senators Marco Rubio, Bob Menendez, and Ted Cruz, who have maintain contact with the Bolivian opposition in order to achieve a possible regime change in Bolivia. The audios also reveal participation in a political conspiracy by the former prefect of Cochabamba, who was accused of corruption in 2009 and fled Bolivia to seek asylum in the U.S., where he is currently living. And here again, speaking for myself, that's brought up because it's significant in terms of what sort of leader might be selected by the U.S. to lead a post-coup Bolivia. Returning to the text, the military leaders' voices in the recording say sarcastically, "We must all be alert against the coup in Bolivia, possible sabotage of the helicopter which transported our beloved Evo. It is not the first time that progressive presidents die in accidents," end quote. Quote, end quote. Protection for Evo. Let's take care of Evo. Pretty creepy. And returning to what they write, the leaked audio also mentions calls from opposition leaders to burn government party structures and to put together a general strike across the country. All of these actions, which were expected to be advertised based on social unrest, would be part of the response to the triumph of Evo Morales in the last presidential elections. The opposition plans, and those were tainted elections, certainly somewhere on the level of the taintedness, if I may, of the U.S. elections, so certainly not an excuse for imperial invasion or coup plotting. But returning to Tell Us Sir, so far none of the opposition leaders in Bolivia has said anything about the leaked audios. In other news, from the UN High Commission from the UNHCR, the High Commissioner on Human Rights, UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Meltzer, has expressed alarm at the continued deterioration of Julian Assange's health since his arrest and detention earlier this year, saying his life is now at risk. Mr. Assange was sent to a UK high-security prison on 11th of April 2019, where he continues to be held in connection with a U.S. extradition request on espionage charges for having exposed evidence for U.S. war crimes and other misconduct in Iraq and Afghanistan. Quoting Meltzer, while the U.S. government prosecutes Mr. Assange for publishing information about serious human rights violations, including torture and murder, the officials responsible for these crimes continue to enjoy impunity, end quote. And speaking for myself, he couldn't have said it better. That's what it's really about. All of the U.S. networks have been down on Assange and repeating allegations against him, claiming that he's a rapist, this sort of thing. That's not what it's about. And that seems to have been dropped. And so now we hear U.S. officials, for example, a CIA official was quoted without being challenged on a National Public Radio broadcast just yesterday, talking about how he thought it was really okay the way that Assange is being treated, because he said, if I may paraphrase, he was saying that Assange was too sympathetic to the Russians, and that he might have been in league with the Russians. And even if he couldn't prove it, he thinks that because Assange reported on the crimes of the U.S. and the Western countries, that he should be treated in this manner, that he should be brought down and tortured. He didn't say that exactly. That was what he implied. And what he's saying is that dissent should be punished. You can say it in grand ways and you can dance around the topic, but this is what he's really getting down to. And the U.S. has, over the years, and especially since 2001, been turning more and more against dissenters and against journalists. And Assange is nothing if not a dissenting journalist. And it's absurd to say that Assange should attack China first, that he should attack Russia first, because he comes from English-speaking countries, and this is his bailiwick. The proper attitude towards Assange should be gratitude for the things that he has helped expose. But this is not the attitude of the corporate-owned press. Quoting Meltzer, Assange continues to be detained under oppressive conditions of isolation and surveillance, not justified by his detention status. And he said, after completing his prison sentence for violating UK bail terms, Assange is now being held exclusively in relation to the pending extradition request from the United States. So here again, it's a case of the big powers simply ignoring the laws. The laws are very handy when it comes to prosecuting you and me. But when it comes to what the big powers want, you can forget about it. And that's what Assange is about. And I think that you should be offended and outraged by the treatment of Julian Assange, who very likely might be killed soon. Now turning to economics. This from article in the New York Times by Clifford Krauss, a surge of oil production is coming. Whether the world needs it or not, the flood of crude will arrive even as concerns about climate change are growing and worldwide oil demand is slowing and is not coming from the usual producers, but from Brazil, Canada, Norway, and Guyana, countries that are either not known for oil or whose production has been lackluster in recent years. This looming new supply, they write, may be a key reason for Saudi Arabia's giant oil producer Aramco pushing ahead on Sunday with plans with what could be the world's largest initial stock offering ever. There he is talking about the IPO offering, the multi-trillion dollar, or more than a trillion dollar, initial product offering that Saudi Arabia wants to put on the world stock markets, and possibly not in the New York stock markets. Why am I bringing this up? Because all of this money bouncing around and the sharply lower prices for fuel, aside from the pollution that it represents, will create inevitably instability in the world economic system. So this is my warning to you. More instability, in a way, is in the pipeline. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. You can find Press Watch on KBOO, and you can find it on KBOO.fm, and you can find it by searching Apple Podcasts for Press Watch. If you just go onto a search engine and you search KBOO Press Watch, you can easily find the Apple Podcast, and that will be available around 10 o'clock. It generates out of our computer here at KBOO, and then it becomes available on Apple Podcasts and on other podcast directories, and I forget which, possibly Spotify. But in any event, if you want to find the podcast, you can not only find it on KBOO by putting Press Watch into the search, but you can search it on any search engine and find that podcast if you just want to listen to it later. It's broadcast in that manner. And I mention this because podcasts have drowned out community radio. And community radio has been steadily losing listeners. It's not because of our content. It's because technology has changed. And our broadcasts are now available not only on the terrestrial broadcaster and not only through our own server, but through many servers around the world. So I am asking you to find your favorite KBOO programs, plural, and including Press Watch, I hope, on your favorite podcast distributor, because it's an easy way to find it, because everyone else is finding it that way, and also because in order to keep community radio alive, this is very important, you need to find that podcast and rate it and review it. This is what happens to everyone's podcast, where they're podcasting about their pet duck or world affairs. It gets rated and reviewed, and I guarantee you that there are podcasts about pet cats that are a lot more popular worldwide on the distribution networks than KBOO, not because, again, of the content, because no one knows about it, because no one reviews and rates those podcasts. So I am asking you to now do that, and when you do that, when you rate Press Watch or other KBOO programs on the podcasts, then it will become visible to other people. And this is something that you can do to expand your investment. I know a lot of you listening to me right now have paid into KBOO, some of you for years and years. And you wonder what's to become. Well, we have to change. And this is how we have to change. That podcast must become visible. You must rate it and review it. Find KBOO. Find KBOO Press Watch on podcast directory, on search engine, pull up the podcast, listen to it, rate it, and review it so that other people can have some idea what's happening. And the great thing about that is it instantly goes worldwide. And I am very interested in putting certain dissenting phrases on a worldwide queue, such as this, which I mean sincerely: imperialism is amoral and degenerate, and so is our Jim Crow police state. They combine with rentier capitalism to subject us and the world to horrors like climate change. They have beaten us down together. The fact that the wages are too low, the rents are too high, the Pentagon is so powerful, the corporate-owned media is so blatant. These are the powers ranged against us, and KBOO is the power we have to push back. So make KBOO powerful. Make KBOO effective. Find us, KBOO podcasts. And I don't like Apple at all, but they're there. People around the world listen to it. Find KBOO on Apple Podcasts. Find KBOO Press Watch. Rate it and review it. Let's talk about imperialism and climate change. The Pentagon has been conducting war on our climate for decades now, and I don't mean just by being primary consumer of oil on the planet, blasting pollution into the air via tailpipes and smokestacks and jet engines. I mean that we, the people of the United States, harbor and tolerate a violent regime that stands for the privileges and profits of the great corporations. That means defending the polluting mines and factories and oil fields and their rich, rich male white owners, from Afghanistan to the Philippines, from Riyadh to Seoul. It means that when the nights are no longer cool enough to stop a fungal blight on your coffee crop in El Salvador, you're going to face a U.S.-trained war machine for 1,000 miles if you try to find a new place for your family to survive. It means U.S.-supplied weapons are going to be brought to bear against you when you look for relief from corruption in Chile. When hurricanes scour your island, you will find that the U.S. ships offshore are not there to bring you relief, but to keep you onshore. If you try to sell the oil under your own borders to survive, you must accept U.S. puppet rulers or starve in an embargo without mercy, even as your municipal water plants come under attack. And despite what Trump believes or doesn't believe about climate change, the Pentagon has been preparing for some time. For one thing, they have anticipated an influx of climate refugees for a long time, and they have war-gamed that scenario. They've practiced shooting at people over climate refugee status. One drought can mean hundreds of thousands of people affected. So far, the U.S. brilliant and compassionate response has been to terrorize little kids and their families by cruelly separating them, kidnapping them, putting the kids in cages, as you have seen over and over, and yet this fascist regime stands. And yet, we need to go to the streets. And today, Trump moved to officially remove the U.S. from all further U.N. climate talks. I wanted to give you a rundown on some of the things that are going on with U.S. wars in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Libya, and Somalia. And yes, all of these had to do with climate change. First, in Iraq, a little blast from the past, from the very recent past, those glorious victories that you were given the footage on Fox News and on CBS and CNN of the destruction of Mosul. It wasn't put that way. It was the glorious victory over ISIS. Well, it was the destruction via artillery of everyone living in Mosul. 9 of the 10 major hospitals were destroyed there. This is the second largest city in Iraq. 76 of the 98 medical centers were destroyed. 6 of the big bridges across the Tigris River were destroyed. 3/4 of the roads, 400 educational institutions, 11,000 residential housing units, 4 electrical power plants, 6 water purifying systems, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, everything, all grain stores, 2 large dairies, 212 oil refineries, petrol and fuel stations, all of this destroyed. And those oil refineries being destroyed meant that Exxon and Conoco and the big oil companies in the U.S. can go in and put in their oil refineries and they can do the they can add the value. This is, they can change the commodity to value added as they move it out of the country in their imperial theft. All public buildings were destroyed in Mosul. Why are people protesting? Because we have not repaired our ugly, unjustified war, our war based on a lie against Iraq. There were more than 40,000 civilian casualties, and 38 out of 54 residential areas in West Mosul are destroyed. The destruction in West Mosul is close to 99%. People are protesting against the Iraq government, but really the U.S. government failing to meet basic needs as an extension of the 2003 invasion and the 1990 sanctions and war. We've been attacking those people for a long time, always based on lies. The tanks on the border that you seem to remember, that you were taught in history class, that were threatening the oil wells in Kuwait, that was a fake. It was all faked. It was all about oil from the get-go. And this is our crime. You can't be neutral living in an imperium like this. All of this keeps us from moving against climate change because the U.S. military still has the great prestige of its constant excuses in the corporate-owned press. I'm going to skip ahead. I don't have the time to go over everything in Iraq, but it's live ammunition is being used against people in Iraq protesting against these unbearable conditions that the U.S. has imposed and continues to impose with its gigantic airbase and the green zone and the ridiculously titled U.S. Embassy, which is actually a vast, armored, walled compound that has major high rises in it, has Olympic swimming pool, has everything that a city needs, and simply represents U.S. militarism sitting on Iraq to steal the oil forever. In Syria, you heard that the Islamic State Caliph al-Baghdadi is dead, which is interesting because he was severely injured in 2014 and said to flee to Syria. He was killed in an airstrike in November 13, 2014. He was seriously wounded in 2015. He was injured in April 23rd, 2015. He was paralyzed from a spinal injury in airstrikes on April 27th, 2015. He was dead of his injuries in an airstrike, according to Radio Iran, the same day. And on June 17th, 2016, he was dead. And is he really dead this time? I just haven't forgotten how many times that they said that bin Laden was dead. And I've noticed that the most recently dead bin Laden looked rather different from the bin Laden who apparently died of diabetes in the Tora Bora Mountains some years previously. So this, what I'm saying is, this is a very questionable. The blurry videotapes prove nothing. And it's all very convenient to getting you to waving the flag and forgetting about the fact that the U.S. has torn Syria apart. Pepe Escobar wrote sarcastically, "It's a quadruple win. The U.S. performs a face-saving withdrawal in Syria, which Trump can sell as avoiding a conflict with NATO ally Turkey. Turkey has a guarantee by the Russians that the Syrian army will be in control of the Turkish-Syrian border. Russia prevents a war escalation and keeps the Russia-Iran-Turkey peace process alive, and Syria will eventually regain control of the entire Northeast," end quote. And Trump said the quiet part loud as he admitted openly that the U.S. was only there to protect the oil, which he believes the U.S. has a right to steal. "In our halcyon days, we made up excuses about freedom and democracy to steal oil. Now with the fascist in chief, we need not bother." In Afghanistan, the U.S.'s promised troop withdrawals have not gone through. If we look back to August 21st of 2017, Trump brought the number of troops up from the Obama drawdown to about 14,000. The U.S. envoy negotiating with the Taliban said on September 2nd of this year that the first 5,000 U.S. troops would withdraw within 135 days of the agreement becoming final. And then on September 7th, 5 days later, Trump came up with his ridiculous lie about how he wasn't going to meet at Camp David with the Taliban because of the death of a service member in a Taliban attack. And so now we still have, 18 years later, 14,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, which holds 60 million tons of copper, 2.2 billion tons of iron ore, 1.4 million tons of rare earth elements, such as lanthanum, cerium, and neodymium, and you can't build jet aircraft without that, loads of aluminum, gold, silver, zinc, mercury, lithium, for example. The Kanishan carbonatite deposit in Afghanistan's Helmand province is valued at $89 billion, full as it is with rare earth elements. That's what it's about. That's what our imperialism is about. I was going to go on to Libya and Somalia. I have run out of time. I urge you to stay tuned because coming up, we're going to have Per Fogring with Fight the Empire, and he's going to bring up the part that we're not supposed to talk about with our dim Republican rulers, namely that there's every reason to talk about Biden and his son's doings in the Ukraine. But Per will tell you more about that. And let's see, I may have just enough time to talk about the Yemeni civil war, which began in 2015 between two factions that claim to represent the Yemeni government. The U.S. is purchasing $7 billion worth of arms from the U.S., but the result has been a genocidal war that you and I are very much a part of, that you and I pay taxes. Hospitals, airports, ports, bridges, and roads have been repeatedly attacked by the Saudis, who are getting satellite support from the U.S., or were, and are still using cluster bombs that they bought by the hundreds or thousands from the U.S., made right here by Terex Corporation. Thousands of people are starving to death, dying from preventable diseases, while an average of 8 civilians die from bombs and bullets every day based on data collected by the Yemen Data Project. And the real horror is that people are dying of cholera in Yemen, a 19th century disease and a hell of a way to go. You don't want to die from cholera. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You've been listening on 90.7 FM from our great big Eiffel Tower on the hill. Hopefully you are listening to me also on a podcast, which, as I was saying, you can find on Apple Podcasts. You can find KBOO, all KBOO programs on the major podcast directories. Please do so. Please rate KBOO programs. This will turn around the listenership and therefore the funding deficit that we have right here. Don't exaggerate that. We're doing just fine, but we need to catch up on our funding. And this is how we're going to do it. Look for our podcasts on podcast directories, including Apple Podcasts. And you've been listening on KBOO.FM. And in that manner, we go out to all the ships at sea.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fogering. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein discusses the report on the FBI's systematic surveillance of activists. At 11:30, it's Between the Covers. Ken Jones interviews Leland Chuck, author of the novel No Good, Very Bad Asian. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. As Teresa said, don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. Cause Cabaret While They Wait will be an evening of performances by various singers, storytellers, comedians, and dancers from the Portland area, and will benefit those attempting to legally immigrate to the U.S. The event will host raffles, food and drink, and music, and comedy performances. Again, that's Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 South.